Cybercrime on a new scale.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. Federal prosecutors have charged three men with the biggest identity theft in history. One of them has been named. Albert Gonzalez of Miami is accused of stealing more than 130 million credit and debit card numbers. This alleged theft was on an international scale. Joining us from London is correspondent Stephen Beard. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
How do you hack 130 million credit card numbers?
With difficulty, one would imagine. It's claimed in this case that Gonzalez, this 28-year-old from Florida, and two other unnamed accomplices hacked into Heartland Payment Systems. That's a U.S. company that processes credit card payments for thousands of firms. The hackers are accused of planting sophisticated software in Heartland's servers, which intercepted cardholders' details as they were making payments.
So this crime was allegedly committed in the U.S., but it seems to extend across the Atlantic.
It does seem to be the case. Two of Gonzalez's accomplices are claimed to be operating either in Russia or near Russia. And of course, potentially, there are a lot of European victims. Some analysts here say 13 million cardholders in the UK alone may have had their details stolen, and many millions more elsewhere in Europe could also be in trouble.
And what's some of the interesting reaction over there this morning?
Well, it's been fairly muted so far. I think it's just sinking in. There's always the feeling here in Europe that European cardholders are less vulnerable because of the technology that is used in most European cards, which is unlike the sort of magnetic stripe that the Americans use. But we'll have to wait and see until this trial eventually begins and the details emerge. We'll find out how secure European cards have really been.
Correspondent Stephen Beard joining us from London. Thank you.
Okay, Bill.
Yesterday was ugly for the world stock markets. Now let's get the latest. Major European markets have come back a bit this morning, just under 1%, thanks in part to upbeat economic data from Germany. Asian markets were also up less than 1%. Yesterday, Wall Street fell back to July levels. The Dow lost 186 points to 9,135. Every day, there are about 100,000 day laborers in this country looking for work. You've probably seen them waiting outside a home improvement store. A recent study showed more than half of day laborers did work in the last 2 months that they never got paid for. Wage theft is on the rise. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports the legal system is beginning to fight back.
The owner of a Los Angeles construction company was recently convicted on criminal charges for not paying his workers. Officials in New Orleans are also talking about making wage theft a crime. So who picks up the legal tab for protecting these mostly undocumented laborers?
It's not going to be taxpayers' money.
That's Miami-Dade Commissioner Natasha Cejas. She's proposing a new ordinance to fine cheapskate employers and use the revenue to cover Miami's legal expenses.
So that it's cost neutral to the county.
Others see protecting laborers as beneficial to the larger economy. Chris Newman is with the National Day Laborer Organizing Network. He says employers who don't pay workers force competitors to cut costs or risk losing business.
It's more difficult for law-abiding employers to compete with the unscrupulous employers.
Meanwhile, the U.S. Labor Department is hiring 250 investigators, increasing its staff by a third to keep up with complaints about wage theft. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by LendingTree, offering the ability to manage money, credit, and loans all in one place. LendingTree.com.
A potentially historic political campaign started today in Japan. The ruling party there is on the verge of losing power after five straight decades of control. The global recession has hit Japan particularly hard, but the country's been struggling economically for the better part of two decades. With more, here is Marketplace's Scott Tong.
All across Japan today, politicians stood atop cars and spoke into megaphones promising change. Opposition leader Yukio Hatoyama's coalition is on the verge of toppling the ruling party, the party behind the world-beating Japan Inc. of the 1980s and the economic sclerosis that followed. Hatoyama spoke in Osaka.
The ruling party promised to make public life better. Has it? No. Consumer life has gone from bad to worse.
He wants to cut taxes and school fees. The incumbent, Prime Minister Taro Aso, spoke just outside Tokyo. His party trails in the polls by double digits, but he wants to stay the course.
The economic stimulus we've taken is working. We're halfway there. The LDP will continue this strategy.
The latest numbers show Japan's economy is growing again. But in downtown Tokyo, many voters speak of economic anxiety. Here's working parent Yumiko Nagishi.
Nowadays, I look at supermarket flyers to find cheaper products. We used to eat out if we were tired. Now we cook at home.
This 31-year-old businessman worries that prices at retail stores are falling. Economists say that makes consumers stop buying as they wait for a better deal. Still, Japan remains the world's second largest economy, and per capita income's over 30 grand. The problem is it's aging rapidly, and confidence in the government is low, says economist Richard Jerram at Macquarie Securities.
The management of its economy has been poor. It's a big, rich country, but it's not really much more than that.
He says on global issues like financial reform, Japan faces a credibility issue. Lots to tackle for whoever wins this election. The voters speak in 12 days. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
And finally, Korean musician Han Bin was reunited yesterday with the 18th century half-million-dollar violin he calls his baby after he left it in the back seat of a New York City cab. You know, Yo-Yo Ma did the same thing a few years ago with his 266-year-old $2 million cello. Lynn Harrell left behind a 300-year-old Stradivarius cello worth $4 million. Can I give a word of advice here? Whenever I get out of a taxi, I always make sure I have my wallet, my keys, and any ancient priceless possessions I depend on for my livelihood and I consider my child. You're welcome. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke. Have a great Tuesday.
American Public Media.